I don't even know how I have 40 followers on Twitter, to be honest with you.
We're talking sports.
I got two.
Oh, you have two now.
With a couple of guys you've never even heard of.
I don't really understand it. It's crazy.
It's Moving the Goalposts. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review, and tell a friend. Moving the Goalposts wherever you listen.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Moving the Goalposts. I'm your host, Nick Mara, joined by my co-host, Mike Masala. Mike, how are you now?
I'm doing well, brother. Yourself?
Not so bad. We're also joined by producer extraordinaire, Andrew Meehan. Meehan, what's up?
How are we doing?
Your internet sounds so much better today.
It wasn't the internet. It was this is an apology for crap quality, even though they got like about 5 minutes of good quality. I was trying to use, which I've seen people do before. I was trying to use my Beats earbuds because I just didn't want to unwrap my headphones out of the bag. It couldn't decide whether I thought I had it set up right. Couldn't decide whether it wanted the audio from my mouth to the earbuds or to the mic. I don't know. It's something I will never attempt again. Mm. Too much.
Learn from experience.
It's, you know, you make mistakes.
Yeah, you do.
What did Alfred say in the, which one was it? Why do we fall?
That was Thomas. Sorry. Why do we fall? So we can pick ourselves back up, learn to pick ourselves up so we can get back up. I don't know. Masala, you had a busy weekend.
Hell yeah.
Why don't you tell us about it?
Are we going specifically Dolphins stuff here? I mean, the Dolphins are the best team in the NFL right now, I think.
So this is, well, I actually, to be honest with you, the Xavien Howard contract, I didn't look too much into. I know that he signed, what is it, for like $50 million. Is that fully guaranteed, though?
So he already had 3 years, like a 3 year extension that he signed a couple years back. And now he extended it for another 2 years after that, basically giving him another $50 million.
So he's getting 25 a year over the next.
Yeah, it will look like that. And that's the way that they want it presented, but he'll be making less than that. And I think they can get out of it in like 2 years anyway. Kind of like, you know, all NFL deals like that.
You know, the interesting thing, and we'll obviously get to the big news related to the Patriots, but the interesting thing for me is it's not like AFC East teams weren't doing this over the past two decades, making these splashes in free agency or spending big on guys that, you know, they were considered cornerstone franchise players. But the Patriots were never this far behind.
Yeah, it feels different.
And I know it, you don't win divisions by winning the offseason, but eventually you do, you know, because your team has to get better in the offseason if you're not going to be able to get bailed out every single time. But anyway, let's get into the big acquisition by the Patriots. They acquired, obviously, wide receiver from the Dolphins, Devontae Parker, for a third-round pick in the 2023 draft. Miami's also sending a fifth rounder in this year's draft.
Correct.
So does that mean that the Patriots traded their fifth rounder to someone, right? If I remember properly.
In a prior trade, I think they have. They have been making a bunch of like mid and late round trades. That might have been the Trent Brown one last year.
Patriots draft picks. Could have sworn that they, because otherwise they are loading up on picks, because I think that's what they're going to have to do to really improve the roster. They have the Dolphins fifth round pick and the Buccaneers fifth round pick. That was what they got for Shaq Mason because they had traded their fifth round pick. So currently the Patriots have a first, a second, a third, fourth, two fifths, and two sixths. And Devontae Parker. Tell me a little bit about Devontae Parker, because I'll save my take for a little bit later, but I haven't really seen too much of Devontae Parker in the past.
This is another perfect example of Bill Belichick goes after guys that destroys his team, that destroy his teams. It's they've done it time and time again. You go like Devontae Parker had a couple really good games against Stephon Gilmore. Bill Belichick's like, I need that guy. I need to make that guy paid. He brings the skill set of Devontae Parker was N'Keal Harry's ceiling. This is the exact body type, play style. He doesn't create a ton of separation, but he's a big body who can go up and actually get the ball, unlike N'Keal Harry. So it seems like that mold is kind of taken, and that would eliminate Harry's position from the roster in my mind. And he's been productive. The thing is, he's just always injured. He had a hamstring injury last year that cost him a ton of games. He's been dealing with shoulders and knees and a bunch of other things. He's only had really one healthy season. It was when he was in a contract year and needed to play. So it does worry me a little bit. And you're getting another number two. Like, this is not a guy who, in my mind, is a number one receiver on most teams. He's the number two in the best case scenario. But again, if from New England, you're probably going to ask him to be a number one, which is what they kind of did last year with Nelson Agholor and Kendrick Bourne, forcing them into a higher role. So I'm a little bit nervous there, but they did improve their roster, and giving up a third round pick and only basically sliding down a couple rounds and flipping the years, obviously. But I think that's decent value. And Parker is under contract, I think, for a year after this. So you get a guy who's not making a ton of money, making less than both Nelson Agholor and Kendrick Bourne. So I think it's a good trade for New England. It does worry me a little bit, but I think it's a good trade all around.
I mean, I got this sense over the weekend on Twitter that you liked the deal as well, right?
Yeah, I think I put like "love it" in all caps or something like that. But it's a good deal. It's perfect for the Patriots. I think his numbers are like, what? I think it's $5.5 million, something like that. You only give up a third round pick. You get a fifth rounder in return. So they're kind of, you know, they're not losing draft picks in a sense. You're just, you know, going down. That's fine. I mean, you know, who cares about that? But it's what N'Keal Harry should have been. You know, what they wanted him to be. He's a playmaker. He catches contested, you know, he can catch the contested ball. It's going to help Mac out in the red zone. I think it clues us in on the end of N'Keal Harry, which I hope to God, unless they are dying to just keep him around, you know, for run blocking, but which wouldn't surprise me. Would it surprise me that they do that? Obviously not, because now you got questions around N'Keal Harry, Wilkerson, Trey Nixon, who you didn't really see at all last year. You saw Wilkerson in a couple of games here and there. You saw them try to field whose decision it was. Was it Bill to, you know, McDaniels pushing that, or McDaniels solely just trying to get something out of N'Keal Harry? I remember that one, you know, when we played the Bills at home for the second time, them just consistently tried to push the ball down the field with N'Keal Harry, and he doesn't use his body. He just falls down like a rag doll, hits the ground hard, and he just, you know, he can't catch it. So this is what Devontae Parker is. This is what he's supposed to be. Do the injuries concern me? Yeah, of course. We had that same thing with Hunter Henry, though. There were questions surrounding him about that. Not trying to make the comparisons of the player, obviously two different positions, but the concerns were the same. And he played a full, knock on wood, he played a full 17-game season. So I don't know. And this, you know, his best year was with Ryan Fitzpatrick, which, you know, QB style, I'm not saying Mac Jones is Ryan Fitzpatrick. I hope he turns out to be a lot better than Ryan Fitzpatrick, now that Fitzpatrick was, you know, an awful QB quarterback, but the same style. That was Devontae Parker's only season with 1,000-plus receiving yards. He had a little over 1,200, and he played a full 16-game season. So from what I saw I remember watching him a lot that season, and I remember, you know, that's, again, when they came into New England, and they, you know, they played spoiler, and we ended up having to play the wild card game. Playmaker, you got yourself a playmaker. You have a bunch of, you know, number two wide receivers now, but you needed a guy. You needed a guy to fill the hole. And I still don't rule. I mean, I don't know about you guys. I don't rule them out getting somebody in the second round, though. I think this makes it possible for them to use that first rounder on something else. We're using on an old lineman, on a corner, maybe not linebacker, but you open the door for other opportunities in the draft now, because they could get someone in the second.
I think you're not as quick to spend a higher pick at receiver. You can afford to wait in the second round. Do you, have you guys seen this guy, Olave out of Ohio State?
Yeah, yeah.
Is he projected to go in the first or the second round?
First.
So how many receivers are supposed to be going in the first round this year?
It's been like five or six, it feels like.
But I feel like I've only heard three or four different names. Like a lot of the second round receivers are just receivers I've never heard of.
Yeah, I think the one second round receiver that everybody's kind of leaning towards them getting is John Mechie.
Right.
But then like the first round guys, like you got like Treylon Burks, Chris Olave, Jameson Williams. You got a ton of names up there. Drake London, who's supposed to be up there as well. It's kind of been all over the place. And I feel like there's a lot of talented guys, but I don't know if it's because this draft is so bad or that they're just getting pushed up. Cause that's what everybody's been saying, is this is just a poor draft in general. But, and people are also saying that there's no difference between the seventh receiver and the 15th receiver.
Which isn't a great sign for drafting guys outside of the top 32.
Right.
I'll tell you what, guys, I think the draft, the pick, it's, or the trade, geez, pick one. The trade itself, you can't say that it was it's a bad trade unless that third round pick turns into something unbelievable. And you could say in hindsight, oh, the Patriots would have been nice for them to have that pick. But based on what they've done in the third round over the past years, this isn't just like the past few years. This is just the third round in general. Moving on from that pick's probably not going to be such a bad thing. The player, like I said at the beginning, I don't really know that much about him because he doesn't stay healthy. And when he can stay healthy, or when he has stayed healthy for a full season, he's played well. And that's with a guy who hasn't had the, I would say that Mac Jones's trajectory is higher than what Ryan Fitzpatrick's ceiling was over the course of his career. So if 2019 may have been Fitzpatrick's best season as a quarterback, if that means that was Parker's best season as a receiver, then I think you could correlate that to being success with Jones as well.
I mean,
I had him 2 years, I think, consecutively for fantasy. And I think if I remember properly, there was one week where he got like over 20 points, and not to turn this into a like fantasy points versus actual football production, but it just sort of correlates to how he's disappointed me in the past. And I'm a little skeptical of how well it's going to work unless he can really stay healthy. You mentioned, and I'll wrap it up with this one quickly.
No, you mentioned
Hunter Henry.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it would be wise maybe for me to look into Parker's injury history, because one of the big injuries that Henry had to deal with out in with the Chargers were concussions. You know, that's a contact injury. It's not like a pulled groin or something like. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like I haven't done the work, or I'm not trying to get out onto the field. Now that he's in New England, maybe the program entices you to get on the field a little bit more. And maybe that's what you'll find out of Devontae Parker, is if he's got a sore hamstring, or if he's got something that he's dealing with in his upper body, maybe he'll still suit up for the game instead of sitting it out.
Yeah. I'm sorry. All right. I thought you were going to bring up like Devontae Parker's injury history, which I'm looking at it. So he's been in the league since 2015. He's not that old. It's not like he's injury wise. It's not like he's damaged goods. He can still play. So it's a matter of, you know, the old question when it comes to, you know, dependability is, or what the hell is it? Someone help you out here.
Availability is the best ability.
Yes. So back in 2018, he only played 11 games. All right, so he missed five. And then this past season, he played 10 games, so he missed seven. Now that's like, so of course, yeah, this past season was the first season with 17 games, so that like even though it's like one game, that really expands things. So like when you miss, you play 11 games, you only miss five. It's a good chunk. But again, that expanded season makes seven games look obviously a lot more. That may have sounded so freaking more stupid than I had it in my head. But other than that,
I kind of see what you're saying. If you miss five games out of a 16 game season, it's close to missing a third of the season.
Yeah.
If you miss seven games out of a 17 game season, it's almost like missing half the season.
Right. So that, thank you, Nick. That makes it sound much better. Other than that, it's just been like, you know, plays 14, misses two, plays, you know, 15, misses one. I mean, I feel like everybody has those moments. I'm not saying don't read into the injuries too much. But it's also, you know, is it a situational thing? Like, how many of those years was it really worth? Like, you know, I wouldn't rule this out. How many of those years that he's been with Miami, is it really worth doing everything you can to come back from an injury? That's not like, and that's just, again, that's a situational thing. Like, we're not going anywhere. Why am I going to come back? Why am I going to bust my ass to, you know, come back and play?
I think the one thing that concerns me, and obviously I've only been in the Miami market for 6 months now, but one of the whispers or talks during this whole discussion has been that he apparently doesn't take his his stretching or his getting ready to play those soft tissue injuries, though, the hamstring stuff like that. Apparently he doesn't take his rehab or preparation as seriously as the Dolphins would have liked him. That was
injury
one of the things.
Prevention.
Right. He hasn't really been spending too much time at TB12. And that could be part of the reason why Miami was looking to get rid of him. I mean, maybe he comes in and he changes that attitude now that he should be reinvigorated. He's playing in his division. The team thought so little of him that they were willing to trade him to a quote unquote rival. He should be willing and ready to play. And it looks, again, if you look at the games played, it isn't a huge loss every season. He does play through them, but he's not as impactful. So hopefully he can come in. I think he has a chance to do that, come in and really prove a lot of people wrong.
And looking at the motivational factor, and I'm not like, I don't want to turn this into like a Tua versus Mac thing, but did his, what did I say? Did the quarterback play go down? In a sense, is Devontae playing with a nobody? No, the biggest question is Mac going to take a step? What kind of leap is he going to take, any sort of leap in his second year? But it's not like he's getting sent to, you know, friggin' Jacksonville. I know they have Trevor Lawrence now, but it's, you know, the quarterback play didn't go down, that's for sure. So that's another motivating factor. You know, he's going to a team in his division with another competitive young quarterback that could potentially get him the ball.
The idea, the hope is that he's coming to a place that's stable. I mean, I don't know how stable the Patriots have been over the last couple of seasons, but we're hoping and praying, obviously, that Parker leaving Miami and coming to New England, maybe being in a different system under different coaches, it's going to keep him on the field a little bit more. I'm hoping that this obviously helps Jones. I'm concerned, and it's really just based off of past histories. I don't want Jones to take a step back. And me and you were kind of saying like, oh, well, how much of a step forward is he going to be able to take with Parker? And then you kind of couch that back and saying like, let's make sure he takes a step forward, because that sophomore slump is something that I could definitely see happening with him. I'm still very concerned about the coaching staff. I think that Parker adds to the talent pool and definitely adds to the depth of the receivers. But Mike, like you said at the very beginning, he's still only a number two. So how much is a number two receiver going to be able to help Mac Jones in his second year?
Right.
And do they still need to try and acquire some type of number one? Does this give them ammunition to maybe take a draft pick, or instead of drafting John Mechie, maybe you take your second round pick and maybe you take Nelson Agholor and you trade them somewhere and you try and acquire a receiver of some sort? I don't know.
Maybe it gives them the opportunity to wait a year on a guy. Like if it's a guy who is injured, There's one in the draft and one in free agency that will miss like most of the season, I would imagine, or at least a good portion of it. And Jameson Williams from Alabama and Odell Beckham Jr. Those are two guys who are going to miss a fair amount of time this year. And does that give them the opportunity to take that?
Is Jarvis Landry still a free agent?
He is.
Yes.
Okay.
But I think, I mean, so like when it comes to receivers, I think there's a difference between, and you know, a lot of people have talked about this. There's a difference between being fast and quick. So Devontae is a guy who's got quickness. You know, he can shake a guy on a move and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I think of the same thing with Jarvis Landry. So I don't know about you guys, but like looking at the Patriots, wide receiver was, I had a question mark next to it, but you just needed like that fat, you know, you just needed that outside speed guy. But I still think you can get that in the draft. I'm not ruling that out, which honestly, that's even better. Get that young guy in the draft. Like, you know, Bourne, Devontae, Aguilar, those are all your 2 to 3 year guys. And then, you know, so a guy like Kendrick Bourne, I could see him taking a leap in his second year with the Patriots. And then I see him, you know, being re-signed after that, you know, maybe, and, you know, we'll see what happens with Aguilar. We'll see what happens with Myers going into his last year, potentially last year in New England. But in terms of finding that outside speed guy, that guy that's going to be here for more than 3 years that you want to develop, kind of like your, you know, your Jamar Chase, you got to get it in the draft. Got to get it in the draft. Could be Mechie in the second round.
But they just don't like those guys. That's the part that scares me. They don't covet that ability.
I was hoping someone was going to bring that up so that we don't go after that guy.
Right.
It's but like I said, I mean, wide receiver was a need, but it wasn't, especially after what we saw happen with all of the O linemen, wasn't my biggest need on this team, and especially on the offense. I think you had more questions at the O line than you did at wide receiver. You just needed one guy to fill in a hole, kind of just make it better. Shape it, chisel it.
All right. And they, I mean, they have a chance for like 2023. They have a ton of cap space again. Like another big spending year. Like I think like right now they have 80 million. I think that's like seventh in the NFL. Everybody has crazy cap space next year. So it's going to,
if you got cap space nowadays, do you want to be spending it on free agents that are out there? Or do you want to be able to spend it on guys that you could acquire in a trade and then sign to an extension? That way they're still younger and somewhat under your control.
I think you probably want to do the latter of those two options. You're also really only trading for guys who are in bad situations. Like there's a reason why most of these guys are moving. Like Devontae Parker, like he's been injured most of his career. He's now the fourth wide receiver in Miami. Like the only real trade that I can think of that's not a huge red flag for a wide receiver this offseason has been Amari Cooper. Like, and that really the only reason there is because they wanted to re-sign Michael Gallup instead. Like the Devontae Adams, he didn't want to play in Green Bay. So you were going to have to trade him. A lot of these guys, if you're trading like really good talent, there has to be a reason for it. And I just don't think,
Tyreek Hill.
He didn't want to be there. They weren't going to pay him what he wanted.
Exactly. Money.
Right.
So there's a reason that somebody would be on the move. If the Patriots have 80, would you say like $80 million they're going to have in cap space next year?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many additions can you make with $80 million? They spent over $200 million last year or 2 years ago, if you want to call it now. And it made them better. I don't think it made them significantly better for a long-term run.
Right.
And I would be afraid of the same thing happening again.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely have to be smarter with those decisions. You're not going to go out and spend money on. We were all sold on Jonnu Smith, and looking back at it, it was definitely more of a risk than we kind of were led to believe.
Yeah. So overall, do you guys, it's obviously a win for the Patriots. I think the three of us would agree.
Definitely.
What
I don't think either side should be upset about that trade.
I mean, if you're getting a third round pick for a guy that would be your number four receiver, I guess that's fine. But if you're trading him to a division rival and you could, in theory, have pitched that against other teams in the league. I think they might have been able to get more than just a third round pick from the Patriots.
I mean, hopefully, but like again, we had talked about Amari Cooper. Like Amari Cooper went for like a fourth.
He went for a fourth, but he also went to a different conference.
Right. And that is definitely a part of it. It's just, I think the wide receiver trade market isn't as crazy. And I know Tyreek Hill just went for a first and a second and a bunch of picks that don't matter. But for guys that are third and fourth wide receivers or second on this team or second on what should be most teams, I don't think the market was as crazy. And like I said, Chris Greer has supposedly been talking to a bunch of teams and they've received a bunch of calls. I don't know if this was the best offer, but I would assume for it to be a trade in your division, I would assume it would have to be.
I'm assuming that Chris Greer and Mike Greer are related, correct?
Chris Greer, yeah. The old, you're talking about the old Al Greer? Is that who you're talking about?
No, Mike Greer. Chris Greer is like a local guy, right?
Chris Greer is the GM of the Dolphins.
Correct. And correct. He's from around here.
I believe so. His father was the GM of the Patriots.
Mike Greer. American ice hockey player. Michael James Greer is an American former professional ice hockey winger who played for four teams in the NHL. The Edmonton Oilers, Washington Capitals, Buffalo Sabres, and San Jose Sharks. Primarily a checking forward, he played over 1,000 NHL games in 14 NHL seasons. Okay, this is where things get funky. Born in Detroit, Michigan, he was educated at St. Sebastian's and went to Boston University. But does that mean that he's related to Chris Greer?
It looks like it. Yeah, Bobby Greer is who I was thinking of. Sorry, the director of pro scouting was Chris Greer's father. The elder Greer should not be confused with the Bobby Greer who broke the color barrier in the 56 Sugar Bowl. This is a crazy Wikipedia. Mike's brother, Chris, currently serves as the general manager of the Dolphins. And they're also related to Rosie Greer.
Who's Rosie Greer?
Like former crazy great defensive lineman.
Pro bowler, I guess. Yeah, was raised in Holliston, Massachusetts.
What a family. I had no idea.
I mean, Mike Greer played hockey. Like,
why, Nick? Are you a hockey guy? Did you play hockey, Nick? Nick, do you like hockey?
No, I'm just like everybody else in his family played football, and here he is, like, taking his athletic abilities and being a professional ice hockey player. Just think it's kind of funny.
After Rosie Greer's professional career, he worked as bodyguard for Robert Kennedy during the presidential campaign.
Wow.
What a time.
Whoa.
Should I have known Mike Greer over Joe Sakic? That's the real question. Who should I have
known? Joe Sakic over Mike Greer. Joe Sakic over Mike Greer. Well, I'm glad we had that conversation because that was actually something I wanted to ask you at the beginning, if they were related. Not knowing that you didn't know who Mike Greer was and me not knowing who Bobby Greer was. So
we went down that rabbit hole and I'm glad we did.
Me too. We're all better for it. So yeah, win for both teams then, you think? That's how each fan base is looking at it?
Definitely.
You know what else is going on this week is professional baseball is picking up again.
We're back.
Major League Baseball is picking up again. Opening day on Thursday. Sox are going to be sending Nathan Eovaldi to the mound to start off the season. What are our hopes for the first month of the Red Sox?
If we're planning on Chris Sale being out for that whole first month, and I think we kind of are, I think that's the way it's looking. I would say try to stay afloat. Their pitching is not great, and I think that would probably end up being the downfall of this team. Is Cora has not talked about, at least as far as I know, who the third starter is in this rotation, and obviously there needs to be at least five of those guys. So it's a little bit of a problem. Their rotational depth, and well, I think their bullpen also could be a question there.
Well, I was just about to say, Mike, you don't need five starters anymore. If you have one day where you use an opener.
Right. That's true. And they could, because they're the Boston, Tampa Bay, Red Sox, Rays.
But I don't know if they're really going to want to go to their bullpen if it's not that great.
They could do what they did last year and like just randomly have guys pitch like three or four innings and kind of do like half a game each.
I think a lot of it's going to depend on where Whitlock is. I think the idea is that they want him to be a bullpen arm right now. I don't know if they're ever going to stretch him out to become a starter. Bloom acquired a couple of lefties like a month ago. I know that like Diekman or Dykeman, I think mm-hmm. it's Diekman, but I want to say Dykeman.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a little bit of success in the majors. He's like a semi-familiar name, but all these bullpen arms, they bounce around from team to team. They'll find success for like a season or two, and then they'll go elsewhere and they'll lose it. So
right.
Who knows what you're really going to be able to expect out of those guys.
That's why I'm never really afraid with going into a season with a bullpen, because it is so year to year up and down, and everybody is always looking for bullpen help at the deadline. Like, you're always going to find that, and you're always going to find like some random minor leaguer who comes up and pitches like a good stretch for you. Like, I think the bullpen's always pretty overblown, but like I said, the rotation having right now, it'd be Pivetta and Eovaldi, you're 1-2 with Eovaldi getting the opening day start. And then you're kind of piecing it together from there. Like you have Waka, you have Rich Hill. It's like, it's not the prettiest sight right now. Hopefully Sale can come back. And I know he said he was feeling good. He's looked like he's been, from the videos I saw of him like stretching and stuff. I mean, it's not baseball activity, but it looks like he's doing something and it looks like he's headed in a positive direction.
What's the lineup, by the way? What's the timeline on Sale? Because that's beginning to like be a real big concern. You know, we were talking about injuries before. Now we're talking about it in baseball. Is this going to be like an all, you know, year round thing with Sale now, the injuries?
I mean, I think the original game plan was he was going to miss the spring. So obviously to this point, he has missed the entire spring. He hasn't pitched in a game yet. Are they going to try and get him any starts in the minors beforehand?
I would imagine so. But it does seem like, cause it's such a weird injury. It's like, he has like a rib, like a broken rib, like
a fractured rib. How do you fracture your rib as a freaking pitcher?
You weigh 160 pounds when that's you're true. 6'7".
Insert that SpongeBob meme. I have glass bones and paper skin. Right. Like that is Chris Sale at this point.
And it is. It's such a shame that this guy was such a, he was a workhorse for the first like 3 or 4 years of his career where he was making no money. Now he finally gets paid what he deserves and he can't stay healthy.
Right. But he still gets to see all the money. Good for him.
Oh yeah, he'll be happy. He will have a successful career. He's got a World Series ring. He's made a lot of money and, you know, won a lot of baseball games.
Did you like his attitude last year too? Like, I can't help but think go back to what game was it after where he was like, "Oh, I left it all on, like, you know, left my balls on the mound or something." His attitude last year too, I don't know. There's a thing about him, like you said, Nick. He used to be this workhorse guy, like put everything into it. Now it's, you know.
I think he might be frustrated. You know, I think that he's the type of guy, every time he goes out there, he's going to give you a max effort. But if his max effort lasts only 5 innings and he's got to throw 120 pitches over 5 innings because he has to strike everybody out. I think they did lose leads, which was their bats would show up and the pitching wasn't there because they're off. They have a good lineup. And that's kind of my concern with April. It's a colder month and usually the pitching is going to struggle because they have to warm up and the bats are going to struggle because they have to warm up by delaying the season.
What's his name? Bitching about, you know, not having a warm enough jacket or whatever last year.
Yeah. At least you don't have to worry about. Yeah.
Richards.
Don't have to worry about him.
Oh my God.
But if the season is going to start a week later, I know they're starting off are they starting off the season in New York?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're not in like a southern climate, but
yeah,
if you get a later start to, if you get a later start to the season, maybe you'll be able to, you know, have warmer weather, and as a result of that, maybe your offense will be able to produce a little bit extra to cover up for the gaps that you're going to have on your pitching staff at the beginning of the season.
Which Sale came back. I remember I went to the game where he returned against the Orioles. What was that? I think that was like the first week of August. last week of July, first week of August. So
sounds right.
Right, the dog days. Perfect. Perfect weather. Perfect. Good on the muscles. Warm it up. Get loose.
Yeah, they should. Their offense should crush this year. If you look like their top like six or seven guys, they're all consistently good. And then like your eighth and ninth are questionable. Jackie Bradley or apparently Rob Refschneider, who made the team today randomly out of nowhere.
Well, here, hold on a second. The last tweet I saw was that their roster is currently at 28 players, so it's not totally finalized yet.
Right, right. So there is a chance that one of these other guys sneaks in or they make a move. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they trade like Jaren Durand or somebody, like to try to get, they're gonna have to start trading pieces.
But this is what we've wanted them to do. We've wanted them to be able to build up a system so that they could move on from the guys that they knew weren't going to work out. And this is where you're going to have to really make your decisions on Heim Bloom. It's one thing to be able to acquire talent. It's another thing entirely to be able to judge which talent to keep and which talent to move on from. Like, do you guys remember back in like 2008, 2009, when people were talking about acquiring Roy Halladay and you were going to have to give up either like John Lester or Clay Buchholz?
Mm-hmm.
In hindsight, if I could have acquired Roy Halladay for Clay Buchholz, I would have done it.
Right. I mean, all those trades end up happening. You always hear like, oh, they were going to have to trade. Who was the guy from
Henry Owens,
from the Rangers? Yeah, they were going to have to trade Henry Owens, or you'd have to move on from Brian Johnson or Anthony Renato, Lars Anderson, like all these guys that people fall in love with. And it's tough because, like, I like Jaren Durand, and I think he could be a decent MLB player, but right now he's your fourth outfielder. Could you trade Jaren Durand, who somebody may still view as a top prospect in your farm system, for a third pitcher? Is that something that you could do? Could you move on from Bobby Dalbec because you think Tristan Casas is ready? Could you eventually, we talked about last week, you're eventually going to have to make a decision on your middle infield when you have guys like Nick York and Marcelo Meyer coming up and you have Xander Bogaerts and Trevor Story there now. So like, these are the moves that are going to have to be made eventually. And I think we're kind of like on the precipice of that right now. Like, this is the real opportunity where Heim Bloom has had a little bit of a honeymoon period with some fans, and it's been a little rough. It's been back and forth. I think there has been a large contingent that believe in him and a large contingent that does not. I think he's been fairly judged so far.
I think it's fairly split down the middle, and people have stuck to one side versus the other. I feel like he's a love or hate type GM or president, whatever his title is.
Right.
I feel like it's only going to get tougher too. So when you sign Trevor Story, for me, it kind of paints the picture of Xander's not going to be around much longer. We're not going to extend him. And then you look at Rafael Devers, who they are fortunately were able to avoid arbitration, but you still got to work on extending him. So I don't know about you guys, after the Story thing, they're obviously not going to extend the both of them. Would I like them to? Yes. Are they probably going to? No. So if I'm looking at that side of the infield and I'm looking at those two players, those two core guys of the Red Sox, like Xander is a core, you know, I put him above Devers of being that core guy. You know, we didn't keep Mookie around. Which one of those two are we going to keep around now? Who are you more willing to move on from? Yeah, sure. It's going to be Story because now you have someone at shortstop. You're not going to extend them both though. So it's going to get tougher. It's going to get tougher for Heim.
It's definitely going to get tougher for him.
Definitely. I've been looking at this from one of the comparisons I've made in recent years has been when the Patriots decided when they had this core in like 2014, when they had this defensive core of Chandler Jones, Dante Hightower, you had like Trey Flowers coming up, you had Darrell Revis, and they said that they had to move on from Darrell Revis to keep everybody else. And then they didn't keep everybody else. Like, that's what I don't want to happen here. You had to move on from Mookie Betts so you could keep everybody else. I don't want them to go into this and do the same thing where,
yeah,
oh, we made this move so we could keep Devers and Bogaerts and our core together, and then you can't keep those guys because that you're going to start losing not only a big piece of your offense and your team on the field, but then you're starting to hurt the actual face of the franchise, what the people what they think of when they think of the Red Sox.
Well, what do you think of when you think of the Pittsburgh Penguins? Because that's what it's really about, Mike, is being able to buy other teams. It doesn't matter how one team does. It matters how all the teams do.
Well, what do you have to say for the fans of Liverpool? What about them?
They've been really good.
Friends across the pond? Yeah, they have been really, really good.
Roush Fenway, LeBron, a lot of things going on with John Henry. He's got his hand in a lot of different baskets.
I still don't fully understand like where he came from, like how he made his money. I guess it's like it's just by being a smart guy and investing well, but I don't know. You just
go and buy the Globe. People like the newspaper, man.
Money. Weird thing.
Control the narrative.
and then you buy your own network and your own radio station, and only people can only say good things about your teams. Again, it's state run media. It's pretty good.
He's not wrong.
This is why the FCC can't cancel me.
That's true. And then you got guys like Tony Maserati on the broadcast.
I think it's great. Isn't that awesome? Does a good job.
It's very weird.
It's weird, but does a good job.
I haven't listened to any of it.
I listened to yesterday, and you know, hey, he's got the knowledge to do it.
The first highlight I saw was Rafael Devers' home run, and Rafael Devers hit the ball, I think, over the JetBlue Park Monster or whatever they call it down there. And Maz is like, well, that's why some people have some problems with him, because he's going to swing at pitches out of the zone. And I was like, oh, this is classic Maz. We are going to get the nitpicky stuff even on great plays.
It's like he hit that one, but he's going to swing at a pitch like that later and not be able to hit it. So, you know, consistency. But actually, I'm glad that you mentioned Devers, because that gets me back to that like conversation that Mian brought up about Devers, Bogaerts, left side of the infield. I think if I was going to hold on to a guy, I'd obviously want to hold on to Bogaerts because he does have that leadership quality about him, but both can be a little bit flaky if Alex Cora is not involved. So obviously this team is invested in Alex Cora. I don't think that they need to be doing the year-to-year thing anymore. Whenever he signs his next extension, it's probably going to be for about 3 years, and he'll no longer be on the quote-unquote hot seat. Devers, I think, would be easier to get off the field, though, and make a designated hitter. I don't know if you went to him now and you said, hey, Raf, we're going to sign you to an extension, but before we sign you to an extension, we're going to take you out of third base and make you our DH. Is that going to drop his price? Is that something that you would then try to do?
Maybe I don't know.
Plug a hole for a season at third base, get Devers as your designated hitter, have him play for a season as a DH, sign him to an extension after he was a designated hitter.
See, I look at some baseball players, though, and I think when you decrease their playing on the field, like playing their actual position, is their batting going to drop? It's another thing with baseball players. It's kind of weird. It's kind of like what went with JD Martinez. I remember there being talks when they first signed him that you got to get him some time on the field.
Sure.
It's a mental thing. I mean, I don't know. That's what it's not trying to compare. Like, I mean, I only played up until my sophomore year of high school, but I mean, it was weird sometimes if I was just hitting and like didn't really get anything on the field. It's a mental aspect.
I would be curious to know if Devers would be like that type of player who just, he loves to hit. He just loves to hit baseballs. He loves to mash. Cause he doesn't strike me as the type of guy who like takes a lot of pride in his defense. Bogaerts takes pride in his defense. If you were going to move Devers to first, I think that would also be another option. Anything to get him out of third base. I don't like him at third for the long term.
Yeah, I think that's probably the answer, is he's going to move eventually. I just, again, like we had talked about last week with Xander moving him to DH, if you're going to move a guy to a different position, second base over shortstop or DH over third base, that does drop their value. And I think a lot of those guys don't like to do that. So I don't know if Devers would be like insulted about that. Like I think Bogaerts would be if you ask Bogarts to move to second base right now, and I think that could be the plan in the future, if they're going to keep him, you're moving him to second or DH. But if you asked him to do that now in this first season where he is likely opting out, obviously, and that takes money away from him. So I think a lot of guys would look at that, say it's a sign of disrespect. You're taking money away from a player who's earning powers only through this amount of time, especially a guy who has been locked down for all this time. We talked about that with Chris Sale earlier. Like, it is a tough tightrope to walk between these negotiations, especially where the guy like Xander is a Boris client. I don't know who Devers' representation is, but it does seem like they both want to be here. Bogarts took less money the first time. Devers has said nothing but good things here, and he said he's willing to at least have those negotiations, and it seems like he's interested in signing a deal, unlike Mookie Betts was, who was constantly talking about how he just wants to hit free agency. Like, I think you have an opportunity to have guys who want to play here, guys who are very good, and guys who are the faces of the franchise. I would like to keep them, especially over unknown prospects, at least right now.
Do you guys want to pick the division at all?
As far as like who's going to, like where everybody finishes or who's going to win it?
Yeah, who, like, I don't know. I don't know if Boston's really the favorite to win the division. They're certainly not the favorite.
No.
But I don't think that there is a favorite.
Yeah. Like,
I put Toronto over Boston.
Definitely I would put Toronto over Boston too.
Toronto still strikes me as that type of team that's like, when the expectations are high, that's when they're going to figure out a way to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they made back-to-back division, or did they make it to the ALCS, or did they lose in the division series both times? I know one year they lost to Texas, and then another year they made it. Like, they were the Orioles for one season. Like,
right.
They get hot for a little bit, and then they disappoint you. So I the Blue Jays, to me, they can be good, but for 162, I don't know if they can be good.
I think the Red Sox and the Yankees are very similar this year. Like, you have some top end pitching talent, and then not a whole lot behind them, and then two really good lineups. So I think they are pretty much equal. And then the Rays have found a way to be good every year for the last 5 or 6 years, just randomly be in that conversation. So I think right now I would have it Toronto, Boston, New York, Tampa. And then Baltimore. And that feels really weird to have Tampa in fourth. I think it's going to be very tight. That whole race is going to be tight. And I think you're having another chance where this could be a three playoff team division again.
I think you could have four, right?
Could, I guess.
I think. I don't know how it works.
The rule changes. This is you people with your constant changing of the rules in baseball, but nobody knows them now. See, right. We knew them for 150 years.
Okay. Rule changes.
It's like a catch in the NFL. Nobody knows what a catch is anymore.
I still don't know if we're doing the coin for the extra batter and second base or whatever we were talking about the other a couple weeks ago.
No, I did see confirmation the other day that it's. They're bringing it back, the ghost run on second.
Yep. Yeah, I told you guys.
It's crazy. Well,
we believed you after consultation. We believed you.
Lack of respect.
Gentlemen, I think that's going to do it for another episode of Moving the Goalpost. But before we end, does anybody have a final blow?
I don't have it's not really a final blow. We were talking about this off the air. So off the air, we were talking about this before the pod. So Nick, you asked me if I had seen the Batman yet. Now, I'm not one to go to the movies alone, because the night that I do it is going to be the night that everybody is there. Now, maybe you have to pick a time like late in the afternoon or early in the afternoon on, you know, a Thursday or something. But still, like, I just can't do it. Can't do it. I don't like being judged. It just, like, so when would you guys go? Like, when you guys have gone to the movies alone, when do you and when would you go? Enlighten me.
So I would definitely say when I go to the movies alone, it's usually because I want to see the movie. So the motivation is there for me to see the movie and I don't care who else is there. However, I don't like being in movie theaters when there's a lot of people there to begin with. So I try and go when there aren't a lot of people there, period.
Yeah.
Tuesdays are great. Tuesday, like mornings or Tuesday before school gets out are really good because it's usually after the weekend. So anybody that's seen the movie that just came out that really wants to see it, they're not going to be there. And depending on the theater you go to, you could get a deal, right? So you can go see that movie that's been out for 4 days for like $7. And you don't have to worry about like, oh, I'm going with so-and-so and then we're doing this after. And then it's a very cheap way to see a new movie.
But see, that's more my scene is to like go out like as a date or like that's all. I've only ever gone to the movies with friends, a date or family.
You, right. To you, the movie theater is more of a
leisurely activity.
It's like going to a sporting event.
Yeah, but like, but even when it's like a date,
to me,
like
going to the movie theater is like going to a restaurant. Like I have to eat. This is the only place I can get this food, so this is why I'm here.
See, but you got to sneak the candy into the theater. You got
no.
Sneak
I'm
it
saying
in.
Going to a movie theater to me is like going to a restaurant because I have to do something, and they're the only ones that are providing it for me. That's why I'm there.
I see what you're saying. But like even like because obviously a big thing about movies now is like, oh, I got to go see the new Spider-Man. I got to go see whatever's the newest thing in the Star Wars, the Marvel, the DC universe. I put DC third for a reason, but that's like the big thing. And like, that's actually changed a lot because, you know, COVID now everybody just streams everything from home and you can just buy it and everything. But like, I did that, like, even with episode 7, I was like, we're going, you know, the person I was dating at the time, I was like, we're going to see episode 7. That's no final, like a final say on this.
So I will also say this is another trick, Mike. I don't know if this is what you do when you go, you can like pre-order tickets nowadays. So it's not awkward saying, oh, can I have one ticket to this movie? Even though who cares? You're going to see the movie. The conversation you have afterwards can be about the movie because you were both there.
Yeah.
What you have to do, back row and to the corner. Don't sit in the middle. Don't sit near the front. It's creepy, always. But it's a very easy way to not be noticed.
Yep. Always the back corner. But that's the thing too. I don't want
to be alone back corner.
Like, I don't want even like the guy I'm buying the ticket from at the counter. Like, really, this is what you're doing on your Tuesday afternoon. It's like, I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
I pretty much do a similar thing. Like Nick, I go like a Monday afternoon. Like if we weren't recording right now, I'd probably go to the movies, just like randomly go and catch a movie that I want to see. I like to do the order beforehand, again, because you don't have to have that little awkward exchange. And then I make sure that I pick like the second seat in because nobody who else is going alone is going to pick a random seat next to one person.
Good point.
Except
uh-oh.
The one time this happened on a slightly busier movie when I went and somebody else went also by themselves and we just sat next to each other and had a lovely time.
So here's the question that I
what
have.
Movie? When what movie was it?
Who sat down? Hold on. Who sat down first?
Me.
What movie
me.
Was it? Yeah, go ahead. That's an easy question to ask, answer.
I think this one was The Lion King. Which,
oh boy.
Which feels very weird being there by yourself as a man in his mid-20s to see The Lion King.
Yeah, I was going to say... Before you do go to a movie alone, make sure you understand what movie you're going to alone. Deadpool is A-okay. Lion King might be borderline. Finding Nemo, get the fuck out of here.
Hey, no, hold on.
You go to Finding Nemo alone.
No, I wouldn't go alone, but I would still go. Like, it's not like terrible. It's good quality. It's good quality.
That's the movie theater that you go to alone because you've purchased all the tickets. That way there's a 100% chance you are not going to be the guy who is alone in a movie theater with a bunch of children.
That's also, yeah, that's actually, when you put it that way,
I
would not.
That was the only thing I was thinking about.
Yeah, I wouldn't go to a movie alone like that. Good, very good point. Very good point, Nick. I would elect not to go to a movie like that alone
like,
by myself.
It's like having a mustache. There are places you can be with a mustache and places where you can't be with a mustache.
Oh man. That was my final blow.
Yeah. My final blow is I watched Moon Knight today. I don't know if you guys have.
How was it?
Diven in. I thought it was okay. I don't know a whole lot about the character. I watched like a quick little recap beforehand of like, here's what you should know. It's very tough to tell what's real and what's not, and when it's kind of happening. If I don't want to get too far into the story, because obviously I don't think everybody's seen it. It came out last week. But there are some building blocks there that will make it, I think, an interesting show, but I don't know if it will make it an interesting like superhero story. Okay. or Marvel story.
Okay.
So I'm interested to see where it goes.
Nice. I'll have to check that out. Definitely have to check it out. Well, that's episode 76 of Moving the Goalposts.
Brian Holloway, 76.
A Sebastian Vollmer, 76.
And Isaiah Wynn, 76.
Get all the linemen out of the way.
PK Subban, 76.
Brandon Gorin. He's the random Patriots offensive lineman I always think of. 76. I don't know why. Hector Velasquez, 76. That was it for me.
There's no current 76s with the Bruins, right? No.
I feel like there is. Clifton, 75, though. What was Zaboral? Was Zaboral 76? Or was he like 56? I don't know, but it's episode 76 of Moving the Goalposts. As always, we want to make sure that you're following along throughout the week. On Twitter, you can catch me at NickMara94. Mike is available at Mike_Masala. You can follow producer extraordinaire Andrew Meehan at Meehan_A83. Gentlemen, till next time.
Later, brother.
Goodbye.